Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. I am your host for this unbelievable show that I just has already changed my life in hosting it. I love the responses that we're getting from people. Nothing but positive responses as to what the show is about and what it's been doing. I just appreciate the vulnerability of people who have been willing to reach out to us and talk about how the show has affected them. That's vulnerability is such an amazing thing. And if you've listened to any of the episodes that we've done previously, you know that it's come up damn near every time. I'm excited about today's episode because we're going to talk to a hockey player. And I think I've mentioned in the past that hockey is a big part of my life and in my fandom. I'm a gigantic fan of a team called the Los Angeles Kings, but I just love hockey. I've loved it since I was a little kid. And the gentleman that we're going to talk to today has been blessed enough in his life that he has, for the vast majority of his life, been able to play hockey and make a living at it, which is an unbelievable dream for so many people. And I just want to talk to him because his life has taken some turns, and part of those turns has been moving to a place of finding the value of mental health. And I think his, you know, without putting words in his mouth, given him kind of a second purpose in life. And Jacob Newton, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to come and be a guest on HeCast and talk a little bit about where you're at right now. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, honestly, thank you so much. It's been a little while since I've done a podcast. You know, before we started recording here, you know, I kind of had mentioned that I did my own podcast hosting for a little while. Did that for about 3 or 4 months. But then as I was saying, you know, got a new job and kind of, again, went on a little detour, as you mentioned there earlier in your intro. But yeah, you know, I'm just so grateful for this opportunity. And I take a lot of pride in sharing my story because I know that there's somebody out there or many people out there that need my story to, you know, kind of set them down their own path of self-healing and self-love and things like that. So again, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh man, this is such a cool thing having you here today. We just appreciate you. Isn't it funny how other people's stories give us perspective into our own lives?
Absolutely, because I think all too often, especially in today's society, we think we're all so different. You know, we might look different, from different backgrounds and things like that. But in the end, we're all so similar. We just lose sight of that. But
yeah.
You know, I think about my story in terms of mental health and the fact that I was sexually abused. How many other people in the world have been sexually abused, unfortunately? Millions, right?
Millions, so absolutely. Right
there, there's one thing that we, you know, me along with millions of other people in this world have in common, you know, and just by me speaking it, it might make somebody else remember it. Because I know for myself, when I first started thinking about my sexual abuse again, it had been 18 years after the fact. No help in those 18 years. And a simple conversation just kind of, you know, pinged something in my mind. And then it started unraveling all these memories that I had of, you know, being 5, 6, and 7 years old. So this right now, this one simple conversation could very well do that for somebody else around the world.
You know, and it's funny, you know, anytime somebody is able to make their living playing a sport, to me at that point, that person is thrown into the category of being an elite athlete. Anytime you can kind of make a living at that, that puts you at a certain level that you can do that. Being this vulnerable and talking about something so crazy personal, you know, at such an age, and then you say, you know, for 18 years you kind of left it be. Was it harder to kind of dig this stuff back up because you were an athlete and there was so much expected of you to be able to perform at that level? Even at that age, were you kind of shoehorned into the idea that no, this stuff I got to leave behind because there's just so much to do moving forward?
Yeah, you know, certainly. And, you know, being a man in modern society, it's kind of frowned upon for us to open up and be vulnerable, which is why you find so many men not doing it. And yeah. Find so many men turning to vices to numb themselves, to not talk about these things. Right. Yeah. And then on top of that, being in a sport that is so masculine, yeah. That's so physical, you know, it just wasn't ever a thought to me to go to a teammate or go to a coach and let them know, hey, I'm feeling depressed or I'm suffering from some PTSD, because honestly, at the time, I didn't even really know it. You know, I had gone to some very intensive talk therapy, which certainly opened my mind up to the fact that I had some healing to do. Yeah. But after the 3 years that I did that, I found that my mind was still in control and it still wasn't allowing me to be my authentic self and be vulnerable with really anybody, even, you know, my now ex-wife. I was emotionally unavailable for the vast majority of my life. And it wasn't until I kind of woke up and realized that it's completely okay. And it's just a conversation to have with another individual about what I went through in my life. It wasn't anything that I did. It was things that were done to me. And through that, I have no shame whatsoever in talking about it.
Well, we go back to that. We've mentioned this a few times in this podcast. It's that Mark Manson quote from The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. You know, the idea that not everything is our fault, but everything is our responsibility. And sooner or later, we're going to have to pay the price of that responsibility and take responsibility to deal with some of those things that are not our fault.
Yeah, certainly. And I think for myself, I think I identified so much with being that victim. You know, I was a victim as a child being sexually abused. And then I was a victim in my life for 18, 19, 20 years until I took ownership and accepted responsibility for where I was at in my life based on the decisions that I was making. But I wanted to hang on to, oh, I'm a victim, right? And then I was a victim in every single aspect of my life. I made it to the NHL and I was on top of the world. And then I got sent down from Anaheim to the AHL and then I turned into a victim all over again. You know, so there's just so many connections that I can make in my hockey career and then into my personal life. And it makes perfect sense to me why I didn't have a career in the NHL.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because I mean, I've got friends that have grown up around me that have made it to the big dance and other ones who have played in Europe. And I know you've had stints all over the place, in making hockey a career for yourself. Like when the abuse took place, you were obviously playing hockey at that point.
The sexual abuse, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wasn't playing at that, you know, I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
It happened for 2 years, 5, 6, 7 years old. So yeah, I was still playing hockey, but it was never, you know, anything really at that time. It was just me more or less a hobby. You know, it wasn't until I was older when I realized that I could potentially make something out of it.
And that was my next question for you. At what age were you kind of identified that, oh no, okay. And I know there's a little bit of luck. There's always a little bit of luck as well. But at the end of the day, to get to the level that you were at, you were being scouted. You were being sent to some of these different camps that were available to give you that, that experience. At what age were you kind of set apart that, hey, this guy could really make something of himself if all the right things fall into place?
Yeah, I'd say it was about 13 or 14.
Yep.
You know, I grew up in Southern California and grew up with this family. They played hockey. I had, you know, known them since I was about 3 years old, playing street hockey, playing roller hockey, co-owning a roller hockey rink in my tiny little desert town in California.
Wow.
And then around the ages of 13 and 14, we started making the long trek, road trip all the way up to British Columbia, to Langley.
Yep.
To go to these showcase tournaments every summer, and we'd drive up there. And again, that's my first year going. I was 13, you know, playing against guys that were playing junior hockey. You know, it was insane when I think back to it, but that was kind of the reality of the world of hockey back then. It was all about these showcase tournaments. And, you know, I guess I kind of fell victim to that again, you know, going back to the victim thing. But, you know, I did that when I was 13, I did that when I was in 14. And then I moved away from home when I was 15. To Oregon to play junior B, and then had a very successful season there, and then went home for my 18 and under year to play AAA hockey for the Junior Kings. And it was pretty much when I was about 13 or 14. You know, I've got older siblings that played, but we made the transition from roller hockey into ice hockey when I was 11. And then being 15, 16, 17 years old, it was a little bit late for them to really make anything, of themselves in terms of ice hockey.
Yeah.
I guess I was fortunate at the fact that I was younger, you know, and had more years to kind of, mature, in my body mentally and be able to play the game at a high level.
You know, I want to go back to the idea of all these years, of course, you were a victim as to what happened. But you also said, you alluded to the fact that you had the attitude of a victim. Was that something that that you were cognizant of back then? Or is it only upon reflection years later where you've kind of taken all the pieces and put them together? Like, can you go back to those junior years of not being at home, you know, going through the pressures of whatever the coaching and education expectations that were had of you? Were you a victim back then as well in how you behaved?
You know, it's honestly, when I think about my hockey playing career, it's kind of hard to say I was a victim because I was always the best on the teams that I played on.
Right.
So I was never really given the opportunity, I guess you could say, to, you know, have to reflect back then and look at myself in the mirror and ask myself if I was performing at the level I wanted to, because I always was. It wasn't until I got to the NHL level where I was equal to everybody and some people above me and then also less than me, you know, in terms of on ice skills and whatnot. But so in saying that, yeah, I don't think I was ever given too many opportunities to where I was left being that victim and complaining. It wasn't until I turned professional to when that mindset kind of started to creep back in.
The reason I asked that question, and I'm fascinated by that answer, because I've got somebody, a couple of people in my life who've reached out to me, and I'm kind of helping them guide through some difficult things they're going into their life. And one of them specifically has a bunch of stuff that's been buried for literally decades. Mm-hmm. And he's in his 60s right now. And he is like dealing with some shit that happened, you know, cumulatively throughout his, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, and he's just dealing with it right now. And I one of the reasons that he had said to me that he never dealt with it before was because he was comfortable. He was comfortable for those decades that I was just talking about. Yeah, maybe he knew there might be some static going on in the background, but he's so comfortable at this point here. He's never been faced with the opportunity or the necessity where he had to deal with any of that stuff. Mm. Have you had a moment in your life where things were comfortable? Even after the NHL, you get to the place where you're still playing pro hockey, you know, you're bouncing around, but you're still having opportunities to use your passion and your craft to make a living. Was there a time where that comfortable place ended and you were forced to deal with some of that stuff that was back there?
Oh, brother, that's an incredible question, because the answer is undoubtedly yes. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I would say in my life, I've experienced three catastrophic events in my life. The first being, childhood sexual abuse that I endured, experienced for those years. And then the second being a mistake that I made of stepping out on my now ex-wife, of cheating on her. Yep. It was my second year of playing professionally. I'd been traded from Anaheim to Colorado, which has led me to Cleveland, where I currently reside. And things were going great. And then I eventually wound up getting sent down to the Allen Americans of the then CHL, now the ECHL.
Yep.
And it was a town over from where I played junior hockey in the North American Hockey League.
Yep.
So I knew a lot of people there. And my hockey career had been going down the drain at a very rapid rate. I went from being a top prospect with the Anaheim Ducks to now being in the CHL, you know, steps and steps away from the NHL.
Yep.
And then here you go. All these things started coming up that I wasn't aware of. I just turned to the things that I knew were going to make me feel good. A, about myself, feel good internally, and feel good about just my overall situation of not being at the NHL, of being here. So I turned to alcohol and chewing tobacco and marijuana, and then wound up making the decision to cheat. And the best part about the cheating was the fact that my ex found out. Had she not found out, I would have never had to answer, you know, the bell, so to speak, in my own life. And it was in that moment when I realized the decisions that I'm making are having an immediate impact on those people closest around me, you know, obviously her and then my family members and everything. So that was a pretty traumatic experience. And after that, my talk therapy had really gone pretty intense, where I ramped it up to doing 2 times a week for a whole year. So that was one situation where I was like, whoa, where are these decisions stemming from? I'm not just doing these because I want to do these. I kind of have no choice, right? Because I've been subconsciously programmed in the first 7 years of my life. And in those 7 years, I was sexually abused for 2 of them, you know, and then on top of it, never receiving any type of help. So it took me doing what I did of cheating to make me realize, holy heck, this is all stemming from my childhood. It's about time I go there mentally to try and figure out, or not figure out anything, to make peace with that and accept it, to step away from that victim mindset into the victor mindset. And I know this is long, but I'm going to jump right into the now second catastrophic event in my adult life that has led me to being so comfortable speaking about this stuff. And it was, almost 4 years ago now, this 2017-18 season. Had just gotten back from a season in the Czech Republic where it wasn't too awesome. It was a very uncomfortable season. I wasn't doing well in hockey, and I didn't have the mental awareness to leave hockey at the rink, and I brought it home with me, and it was just an overall bad experience for my then wife and kids. And so the next summer, she decided she didn't want to go anymore. So then I had to decide, am I going alone to Finland, or am I staying home and getting a normal job? Well, I wound up going to Finland by myself, leaving behind her and my two kids. And then 2 months into that season, she decided she didn't want to be with me anymore. And so there's catastrophic event number two, where I then decided I can't allow any external situation or experience to make me feel internally what that one decision did. And then I turned within and went down the path of spirituality and just loving myself way, 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 way more, and getting into a level of mental awareness that I can now kind of tap into at any moment, inner stillness, inner peace. And so I'm so grateful for everything. I'm grateful for cheating. I'm grateful for her, my ex, deciding she doesn't want to be with anymore, because everything has led me to this exact moment. And this amount of self-love that I have is just a beautiful thing.
Okay. So there's a lot to unpack there that I just want to jump into, like, because I think it's really important. There are people out there right now who are in their rock bottom moment, or they're transcending into their rock bottom moment, or they're maybe becoming aware that that's the case, because they've been blinded, and now some flecks of light are starting to come in. They don't have perfect vision, but they're starting to see some light, and recognizing those things. So I want to ask you about this a little bit. The cheating that happened, around the Colorado time and the Cleveland time, and the actual breakup of the relationship. Were those two things related, or did the cheating get found out and then there was forgiveness for a time, and then, you know, the 1-2 punch, the two punch being you moved away, and that's what actually killed the relationship? Is that how it happened?
Yeah. So the from the time of the cheating and then the time of the divorce, the separation was about 7 years. So there was certainly obviously a lot of forgiving, and then two kids came into the picture as well.
Okay. So for there are those guys out there who are living with this guilt. Maybe it has come to light. Maybe it hasn't come to light. They've been unfaithful. One of the messages that you do have is that, hey, there can be life after that. There can be forgiveness.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a reason why I stepped out. For any men out there, for any women out there, there's a reason why you're stepping out on your partner. Yeah. And in most cases, if not 100% of the cases, it has nothing to do with the partner. Me stepping out had nothing to do with her. It had everything to do with the internal experience that I was having that I wasn't facing. Right. And because I wasn't facing, I externalized it and then latched onto somebody else, knowing full well that it wasn't right, knowing full well what I was doing. But again, I was at a place in my life where I wasn't mentally aware. I didn't know that I had a different choice to make. And now I understand that there's always another choice, and there's always a healthier choice to make. And I have the choice to make that healthier choice.
Well, you talk about this gratitude that you have and this self-respect, this self-love that you have now. Clearly, when you made that decision, you did not love yourself very much.
Oh, absolutely not. But I wasn't aware of it. You can't begin down the path of any type of healing unless you become aware of your stuff. And I wasn't aware at all. I think in society today, this term self-awareness is being thrown around like crazy. Right. And I think it's mental awareness that people should start striving for, because I feel like if you ask a person that's claiming to be self-aware, what are you going to do to not do these habits again, or to not experience that again? Oh, I'll just stay away from this person. I'll go to the gym more. But you're not, like, whenever the conversation turns to them, they're very good at identifying the flaws in other people. But when the conversation's on them, there is no mental awareness there. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
Again, I believe it's mental awareness that people should be striving for.
What's it like playing, like, the league that you were in, the CHL, much rougher it's a really rough league compared to the NHL in some ways, right?
Yeah, certainly. You know, it's at that time it was a very low league, and it wasn't like a developmental league. There weren't any guys really there that were on NHL contracts. I might have been the only one on my team.
Right.
So it was certainly a league that was more known for its fighting, you know. Yep. In these smaller little towns that, you know, don't exactly have the most to offer, except for Allen, where I was, is an incredible city with a tremendous amount to offer. But for the most part, it's just, you know, maybe guys towards the end of their career that know they don't have a chance at playing even in the AHL. Let's just come down here, kind of be satisfied, you know, be comfortable in this lower league. And it was a league that I wasn't proud to be in, but I was comfortable going there because I knew so many people there.
Well, and the idea, like it must have been, that's my next question, is how did it affect your mental health knowing that, you know, there's some goals and dreams and aspirations that are there that were kind of thrown in front of you. Now you're able to play hockey, which, you know, I'm sure that there was some level of gratefulness, whether subconscious or not, that you could at least do what you wanted to do to make a living. But at the same time, it must have played on your mental health at that point. Being in that league, you said yourself you weren't proud of it. Did that do any? Did that do your long-term mental health any favors, or is that, yes, that was part of something that helped you have that aha moment?
You know, so it's so funny. I just made this connection right now. Me getting sent down to that league was never, for me, it was never going to be about hockey. It was always going to be so that I could go down there and cheat. Because that was where my journey was leading. I needed to wake up. I needed the catastrophic. I needed that rock bottom.
Wow.
And hockey led me to my rock bottom. So I'm forever grateful for hockey. But me going to Allen had everything to do. I was meant to go down there and make this decision so that I could change my life, you know?
Wow.
Which it was crazy. I literally just thought about that. But I even think about the fact that I reached the NHL level. Yeah. When I sit back and reflect on it now, and I think it's a big reason why I'm at peace with my hockey career, is because I was always going to make it there just to purely give me a platform to speak, to share my story. And it was always going to be about mental health. And even though I'm not fully doing it now, I still have a platform through my career. And I wouldn't have that without hockey, without probably making it to the NHL level, you know? So it's 100%. Just fascinating to think about this stuff sometimes.
Well, I think it's, one of the legendary personal development coaches, I think it was Jim Rohn, that said, you know, you feed your family during the day, you work on your fortune at night. And it, and I don't think he was necessarily talking about necessarily a monetary fortune. I think part of that fortune that you work on at night is you know, fulfilling that true purpose, that true inner thing inside of you that wants to come out, whether you're writing, you know, whether you're an artist of some sort, or whether you're doing something like what you're doing, is you're working on a much bigger project that's going to transform lives, you know. And I love the fact that you're willing to kind of talk about how, oh yeah, I'm in this place of transition right now. I had to go get myself a job to pay the bills during the day. But you're still laser focused on what the end goal is. And to me, from what I'm hearing, is your end goal is that you want to help improve the mental health of men out there who have been through similar things or their own personal journey. And you want to use your story to help them get past what they're going through.
Yeah, certainly. And you know what, honestly, it's not even just about men. Of course, I believe men need to take a bigger role in terms of mental health. I think women have kind of blazed the trail. But it's also, we need to understand that it's kind of that way for a reason, that for men, we've been told for so long to suck it up, to move on, to let go, which can be very traumatizing and catastrophic to people that don't have the tools to do those exact things, you know?
Yeah.
When I think back to my podcast, when I was hosting that, I had many women come on too, because I believe mental health is a conversation for everyone, yeah. Not just for women and not just for men. We're all one.
Yeah.
We're just the human race, you know, and we all have our struggles. We all have our things that have happened to us. Life itself has got challenges, you know, and that's a conversation for everyone.
100%. And I mean, you know, you look at what He Changed It is doing. I've got a couple points to make on that. Like, number one, when you talk about that idea of sucking it up and all that, He Changed It. What we're trying to do through HeCast and through what He Changed It is, we're trying to take back something. And I love how there are groups who have been taking back phrases that have kind of a negative past or connotation to them and washing them to the point where there is a positive connotation. We're doing that with the phrase man up. And our idea of manning up is to actually take responsibility for where things are at and that there's work to be done. And, you know, that traditional suck it up, push it down, whatever comes to your mind when you think of the idea of man up, we're basically saying, no, manning up is going to be a good thing. It's going to be where we say enough of this shit. We're going to actually take it back and do what needs to be done to become whole. And that includes, of course, being vulnerable and manning up. The idea of manning up being something where you're actually saying, okay, you're planting your flag and then becoming vulnerable. Mm. That's the definition of man up that we're looking to make.
Oh, I love that. I love that because like there is so much masculinity in just being vulnerable. Yes. But again, we have been told for so long all these different things. And so we don't know that it's so masculine and it's so strong and it's so insanely empowering.
Yep.
Right. I know when I first started to share my story, the first ever article I did, the first blog I ever did, gosh, if I didn't just feel this rush of energy when I was done writing it or when I was done speaking on it, I just felt like all this loving energy just started just swarming through my body. And I felt like I could just take on the world. Like who wouldn't want that feeling? You know, it's higher. It brings you higher than any drug in the world could possibly do it. And words did it for me. And it's just crazy to think about, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, and we're trying to show people who are at those moments of blindness, of just, they don't have any clarity at all. And they're at that moment that vulnerability is a key to getting that kind of empowerment. And it's an amazing thing. I felt it as well. I've seen it in many people in my life. You know, I get the best job in the world because I'm the guy that gets to host the podcast. I'm the guy that gets to talk to everybody. And we all have a story. The other thing I wanted to go through for when you talk about having women on your podcast, like He Changed It, the two founders of He Changed It are women. Yeah. And I love the idea that in our world right now, that as our cultural evolution is happening, the feminine power is rising and saying, okay, hold on. And I don't want to use the buzz phrase words of toxic femininity, toxic masculinity, fuck all that. I'm leaving all that in the background. The idea that women are coming to the forefront, being given a chance to have the spotlight. And they're saying, hold on a second. We're not going to do it the way that it's been done for the last couple thousand years and just reverse the roles. No. We're going to come to the table with our unique perspective. And the idea that, you know, Candace and Shannon, as they're building He Changed It, they both have said to me, oh, I've got sons. What kind of a world are they being, you know, ushered into with all of this, you know, these thoughts of pressure and privilege and stigma of man up and fear of things like Me Too and all of these things. No, we need to come up with a better solution. And I can tell that we're brothers from a different mother when it comes to that opinion.
Well, absolutely. And I think in order for us men to be more masculine, we got to be willing to be more feminine. And the vulnerability, the transparency, the honesty, the authenticity from a man is us being feminine, you know? And I think, you know, telling a man to be more feminine, unless that man is awake to actually hear you, you're probably going to be pushed aside and he's probably going to, you know, create some discomfort with a lot of people, you know, but
it'll be misunderstood and it'll create distance.
Well, exactly. More division than, you know, than we already have around the world, you know, but again, like, so for 3 years, I went on an incredible path of being so feminine, of just crying and crying and meditating and crying and, you know, trying to heal the emotions that were glued, that were stuck to my inner child. And then I went through a breakup after my divorce. I was in a relationship and we broke up and I just said, you know what? I've been so feminine for the last 3 years that, you know, I'm going to start tapping back into my masculine again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's completely all right. You don't have to like be healing all the time. You know, once you wake up to a certain level of mental awareness, you can't flip the switch anymore. It's just, you're turned on now. You're aware.
It's a part of you.
Yes. You've stepped down a different path in your life and you can't shut it off. This is just the path you're going to be on forever.
You said something earlier that comes to mind as you just say this now. You talk about subconscious pathways, and I've been, this is a place that I've kind of a journey that I've gone down that path of understanding what subconscious pathways that get created early in life. The pathway happens, the behaviors follow, the habits show up, and suddenly you got a personality. And if I hear you right, what you're saying is once you learn how to reprogram some of those pathways, clip off the dead pathways that you can now be aware of and you don't want anymore, you create new pathways. And then at that point, like you say, you're not being quote unquote masculine or not quote unquote feminine anymore. You're just being that healed self of yours, and you're just running on autopilot because you got subconscious pathways that dictate what's going on in the forward consciousness. And I don't know if that means anything to you or not.
Well, it certainly does. Cause you know, it's been said now, it's coming, a lot of it's coming out more and more as more and more people continue to raise the collective consciousness of the world. But the first 6-7 years of our lives is when the subconscious mind is being programmed. And it's so fascinating. I think back to last summer, my daughter, her name's Harper. She just turned 7. She said, "Daddy, I feel like people are building my brain. I feel like people are putting blocks in my head." And I was just sitting there thinking like, oh my God, she's may not know exactly what she's talking about, but she is spot on, you know? And so those first 7 years, we aren't aware. We're just kind of sponges, and we take all these things in, and these external voices in time become our inner voice.
Yes.
You know? And so 95% of our everyday interaction with reality is seen through the lens of the subconscious mind. So 95% to 5%, that's an incredible, advantage that the subconscious mind has over our authentic self. You know,
well, it's power, right? Like,
well, exactly.
The way that I like to describe it is, if let's say I'm typing into my laptop right now and I'm just, you know, I've got a good train of thought going on and I'm just typing like crazy. Okay, well, what I'm seeing on the screen is a teeny tiny fraction of what's going on in the background of that computer. Mm. And what's more powerful, the interface of me and that keyboard, or all of the thousands of processes that are going on simultaneously in the background of that computer? That's our consciousness versus our subconscious. Our subconscious is so much more powerful than what we're actually seeing in front of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can just start beginning to wake up to that fact, then you would see then and understand at a deeper level that you have been kind of just sleepwalking through life.
Yes.
Our conscious mind takes it in, but it's our subconscious mind that responds and reacts to reality, you know. But if you can start to think new thoughts, you're then creating a new future, because if you're not thinking differently, all the thoughts that come into your mind are all thoughts that are predicated and based on past experiences.
Right.
And if you aren't changing that, you're just getting the same, you know, known future based on your past. You know what I mean?
100%.
But it's very challenging. I think about mental health. I think about the mental aspect of life, and I try and compare it in some ways to the physical health. You know, people break an ankle or, you know, dislocate a shoulder, they go to the doctor and they say 6 weeks you're back on the field, or 6 weeks you can get back to work. And yep, there's a certain level of comfort that comes with that.
Yes.
But with the mental health, there isn't that. So people want to get lost in thinking about the light at the end of the tunnel. Well, there's light at the end of the tunnel for physical health. There is no light at the end of the tunnel for mental health, because the light is in the work. The light is in the daily choice to choose you over and over and over again. And once you start doing it consistently to start transforming your lifestyle, it becomes addicting, and it's like a drug in itself.
This is why I fucking love this podcast so much. The way that you just described that, you know, the idea of the light at the end of the tunnel for the physical, but the light for the mental is the work itself. That is for lack of a better term, that is a light bulb moment for me right there. Like, that is bang on, because the work and the empowerment that you get in the work moving forward, creating this awareness, you know, having these insights, that is what a way of describing that. And I don't know if that's the first time you've described it that way, or if you've in your podcast, you've described it that way, but I cannot thank you enough for articulating it the way you just did.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I certainly have spoken on that. I don't know the first time or how long ago it was, but I've obviously, you know, being a hockey player, I've had some injuries, you know, and yeah, it just felt so good knowing that when I go to the doctor right now, I'm going to get answers right away. And yes, through that, I can feel comfortable. Through that, I can feel motivated. I can feel inspired. I can feel empowered. Right. But if I went to the doctor and wanted to talk to him about my depression or my PTSD. And instead of him having a human to human conversation with me, he just slaps me with a prescription and says, I'll see you in 6 weeks for a checkup.
Yeah.
Well, damn, is that going to be discouraging? You know, I went there to spill my life out to this man, and he just puts a piece of paper in front of me and says, you know, on to the next person up, you know? So just having that sense of awareness around it, if you fall in love with the journey, if you fall in love with the work, there's nothing in this world that is going to make you feel more joy and gratitude for life.
Oh my God. See, there's another one right there. If you fall in love with the journey, like, yes, that's the part that I think so many people, but especially men, because of the lack of vulnerability and the stigma and all of that stuff that we've talked about, don't get taught right from the beginning. Hey, the journey is actually the part that you're going to find a lot of fun with. And then you're going to realize you're at a destination when you're completely changed in how you think or how you behave or how you articulate, whatever the it might be.
Right. Well, think about it in this terms, like if every NHL team, every football team, basketball team, day one season just started, what's our goal?
Yep.
The Stanley Cup.
Yep.
The championship, right? But if they gained that the very next day, when they look back and reflect, what are they going to be really reflecting on? Nothing. But when they win it after an 82 game season and a 27 game playoff, now they have all this journey. And if you aren't in love with that, the championship will never, ever feel as good if you just got it the very next day. If you get those instant results, which in society today, we're so accustomed to, we've got these cell phones, we've got laptops, we've got instant gratification, instant results in the palm of our hands on an every single day occurrence. But if we can step out of that and understand that the journey of loving yourself more, of self-healing, it's going to take you your whole life. But in week one, you're going to feel good. And then two and three, and you're just, there's nothing like it, honestly.
Oh man, I just appreciate how much how clear you are in articulating this. Is your podcast still available? I know you haven't shot any for or recorded any recently, but are they still available? Can people find them?
Yeah, people can still find them. I'm not recording anymore. There was, when I think back to it, it was never something that I guess truly wanted to do. People had mentioned and suggested I do it because I used my Instagram. If you've ever seen it, it's just me in front of the camera talking for the most part, you know.
So where can they find it? And what is your Instagram? Because I think there's going to be people who this really resonates with. And I think it's really important to get that out there, Jake.
Yeah,
so, I really appreciate your story here.
Yeah, absolutely. So my Instagram is jacob.newton5, Newton like Isaac. And then the podcast, if you're on however you listen to podcasts, if you just type in Sports Epreneur podcast, it'll pop up. I hosted it under a different platform, but it's the RAV series. So you click on it, you know, subscribe or don't, right? But every time you scroll down and you see RAV, that's going to be me hosting the podcast. And it stood for Raw, Authentic, and Vulnerable. And so, yeah, I did about 35, but I think around only 20 are available.
Okay.
There you have it.
Well, we appreciate that very, very much. And you know, one of the things that He Changed It is trying to do is shine lights to different people out there who are shining lights. And I love that that we can do this with you and that we're going to develop this relationship with you. You've downloaded the He Changed It app already. What do you think? What's your impression of what the company is trying to do?
Well, I just think it's just so important. You know, I think we talked on it earlier. I just think it's so important because we need more men. We need more men stepping up to the plate and being more willing to be feminine, right? Because again, this isn't a one-way conversation. This is a two-way conversation. And I'm just very impressed with the aspect of like community in the app, you know, and I just think we need more people closer to us. It's great to have these conversations, right? It's great to have the technology so that you and I can be speaking now and I can speak to people in Finland and Norway, but it's a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, but it's just, I think it's a lot healthier in some senses to have people within your community that you can turn to if you're ever, you know, struggling with anything. So what you guys are doing, it's just inspiring. It's empowering. And I'm very happy to make this relationship with you guys, and who knows where it leads. But I'm just so grateful for this moment right here, right now with you.
I feel the same way. I'm a big power of now guy. I'm a big, find gratefulness in the moment. You know, the past is great. Respect it. Don't live in it. The future, it's coming. Prepare for it, but don't put everything down. The present is the most important thing. And I feel the same exact same way as to what the perspective that you just did a great job talking about. You know, as we kind of close up here, I just want to ask, I'm going to go back to a hockey question and then and go from there. What's the difference? You played a lot of European professional hockey. How different is the game playing professionally over there versus over here in North America?
So in my time with the NHL, I only got 2 preseason games.
Okay.
So to sit here and think that I can speak on how the NHL is, it would be complete arrogance. And,
but you didn't play professionally over here though. You did.
No, I did. But it was still such a short amount of time. I don't even think I got 100. I got like 120 professional games, you know, between the AHL and the ECHL. And,
okay.
So, you know, I would say that the 2 leagues that I played in Europe,
yep,
being the Liga in Finland, the top league in Finland, and then getting some time in Sweden in the SHL, yep, I would certainly say that those 2 leagues are better than the American Hockey League.
Okay.
In the respect that they're older. It's like trying to compare college hockey to major junior. Yes, there are major junior stars, but in college hockey, we're talking about more grown men that are about professionally ready now from the ages of, you know, 21 to 25, opposed to 16 to 20.
Right.
You know? So the comparison goes to the AHL, to the Finnish league and the Swedish league. Well, yes, the AHL is a great league, but it's a lot younger league. And these other leagues in Europe are leagues that have more mature, grown, faster, stronger guys playing in it. And that have been, heck, I mean, these guys in Finland and in Sweden, they play professional games at the age of 16 in these leagues, you know, and these leagues are no joke. There's, you look across the landscape of the NHL now, there's, you know, so many professionals from Sweden and from Finland, because that's just 2 countries that just breathe and die for hockey, just like they do up in Canada, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's no surprise when Finland beats Canada in the World Championship, because it's hockey number one for that country, you know. So
it just occurred to me right now, and I'm glad that I kind of sort of finished up. I hate how fast these go sometimes, especially when there's a back and forth going like what we have right now. First off, you'll be on the podcast again at some point, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. but the thing that just, I don't know if it means anything or not, but it just kind of occurred to me as you're saying this, it seems like your entire life, Jacob, has been, and I think you agree with me that many times when we're in a moment, we realize that our entire lives have been building us up for this moment. Well, the idea that you have transitioned the way that you have, and you can talk about different elements of the game and different elements of where you're going and into coaching and some of these things, every single one of those moments that have happened in your life have happened for a reason, to put you in the place that you are right now, to prepare you for the next adventure that you're going to go on.
Absolutely. Every single situation I've been in my life has given me a certain level of just peace and acceptance for what is. I have no idea where I'm going, but I love where I'm at. And through that, I'm going to get where I'm supposed to. So yeah.
You've inspired me today. I know that you've inspired a lot of people. As He Changed It grows and expands, I'm looking very forward to, you know, we're putting the community, the He Cast community in He Changed It in one of the next iterations that come out. And I'm looking forward to reaching out and spending time with publicly some of the people who have been on He Cast. You are near the top of that list, sir, of people that I want to do that with. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to be part of HeCast today and to shine the light that you have discovered through your journey.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody behind the camera that I can see. You're all beautiful people. Awesome. Thank you so much. And if I could just leave, you know, the people with one thing, I think, you know, growing up, we were taught to stay away from ourselves, to externalize everything. And I promise you that there is nothing better and healthier and stronger that you can do for yourself than to turn within and put all the responsibility on yourself, take ownership of where you're at in your life, love yourself a little bit more, have empathy, have compassion for yourself. And if anybody out there is ever dealing with anything and they have nobody to speak to, because unfortunately so many people don't, please reach out to me on Instagram. I am here and I love being of service to people because I know that I needed people around me to help me to get where I'm currently at.
Very powerful. I just can't, I can't express the gratitude enough. I'm grateful for Jacob for being here today. I'm grateful for this platform that I've been, I said this many times and I'll say it many more times. I don't do a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to He Changed It. My wife is the CEO. She's a founder. And they are building this thing. The iteration that it's at right now, as we broadcast this, it's in its infancy. And I know the plans and the features and things as the evolution of this movement happens, what's going to happen. But what I do know is that I don't have to do the heavy lifting. I get to do the fun stuff by hosting HeCast. And I'm so grateful to meet people like Jacob as we do this process. So that's another episode that go by way too quick. But at the end of the day, I just want to say how grateful I am for anybody who's listening to this. Please feel free to subscribe, to share. And this has been another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.